Well, as promised, Terence Corrigan from the Institute for Race Relations joins us now. Terence, your piece this morning on expropriation of land without compensation affecting or potentially affecting residential properties has got the BizNews community all in a tiz. It's very well researched. You provide lots of evidence to it. It's a topic, though, that you and I spoke about in London going back a couple of years already now. What got you, before we talk about residential or the impact on people's homes or potential impact on it, what got you interested in this subject in the first place?
Even before I got before I came to race relations, I've been very interested in the question of property rights. I think that it's a part of a human rights framework that is often underplayed. You know, you can have all sorts of wonderful rights, but if your estate can be pulled out from under you, you can be in a pickle that's very difficult to resolve. Having done quite a bit of work around Africa, this often struck me that we have a population that's that's very entrepreneurial, that wants to make money and provide for itself. But one of the big barriers that stands in its way is a lack of control over its assets and the ability to leverage them.
And that lack of control comes because of politics.
Largely, you know, I think we often talk about the legacy of colonialism, and I think this is actually one area where countries as diverse as, you know, Zambia, Nigeria, and South Africa, have that legacy. The idea that Africans, you know, exist in a sort of world apart, and you know, need special restrictive regimes that grant their leaders control over their assets. I think, you know, we have to break from that decisively.
And what is the public perception right now? You obviously engage a lot. You do lots of talks and presentations. What does the public think is going to happen with the expropriation of land without compensation?
Well, okay. I think, first of all, the idea that it's expropriation of land, I think that's something of an assumption. That's been packaged. But I think we're talking about something far bigger, and whose implications could be far, far wider. But for the most part, if you speak to people, and I mean, you know, I'm talking about some fairly well-informed business people, ordinary townies around the Braai, it's all, they see this as something that, you know, Farmer Pete has to worry about. This is about farms. And, what prompted me to write that piece that you referred to was seeing lawyers and people, you know, and mortgage agents talking about this as though this is all really an agrarian thing. It's not, and anyone with an understanding of South Africa's land reform program would not make this sort of assumption. Now, having said that, I'm very much in favour of land reform. Land reform is both morally necessary and economically it can be very useful to us. What I'm worried about, and what I think is a sort of highway to disaster, is the current policy trajectory, which undermines property rights, and which ignores the real problems in favour of this chimera that if only the government has that much more power to take your stuff, you know, somehow things will fall into line. It's insane.
And the latest furore here came from a tweet that SA Home Loans put out. Just take us through all of that.
they very helpfully put out on Twitter the idea that as far as they're concerned, if your home gets expropriated, you still owe money on a bond. They will expect the bond to be paid, but you know, don't worry, it won't come to that because we think this is all going to be about unused land and about farms and things like that. And as I say, I think that they've fundamentally misread the situation. I do give them sort of 10, at least 9 out of 10 for being willing to engage with their clients. But you know, we've heard the same thing from other banks. You know, until something changes, not quite sure what that something is going to be. You know, people must accept that they've entered into this contract, and banks don't expect to be held liable. And that is not a great position to be in if you are if you are a farmer who has a bond, or a suburban homeowner, or for that matter, you know, somebody who's sort of fighting their way out of poverty in this country, and you know, maybe has managed to acquire a small property that they're paying through the nose to finance. You know, I think there's two things to bear in mind here. The first is that we saw a lot of this back in 2018, farmers in particular saying, oh, this will never happen because the banks won't let it happen. The idea is that, you know, the banks will come to the rescue, and we're not seeing that. The banks seem to be predominantly interested in protecting their own interests, which I can understand, but it's cold comfort. The other thing is that, you know, those of us who are concerned about what we've been able to accumulate, and those of us who have aspirations, are going to have to accept that that pushing back against this is the responsibility that falls on each one of us.
Hmm. If the banks then are saying that they will be able to presumably recover the mortgages from people who might lose their properties, does this mean that they're continuing to lend? If you buy a farm, will you still get a mortgage?
Well, look, I think there's a lot of sort of hypotheticals and involved here. Now, no one knows how this is going to play out. What we are saying is don't be complacent, don't be sanguine about it. This is the direction of play is not encouraging. But yeah, look. That the idea seems to be that, you know, they will recover it in some way, but there have been comments from the banking industry over the years that this could trigger what they call a classic banking crisis. There have been comments about how if this goes ahead, I think this was towards the beginning of 2018, that banks would no longer extend credit, which I think in the private sector's terms about 120 billion to the agricultural sector. So, you know, there's a very real chance of this. But, you know, I think it was about 2011 an approach was made to the state, I think by organized banking. The idea was that if the government goes ahead and starts to seize things, then they kind of want their interests to be taken care of. So, you know, the government must sort of guarantee the bonds, which, you know, says to me that, once again, banks are fundamentally going to look out for themselves on this. But it's also interesting that over the last year, well, it was about three or four months ago, a question was asked in Parliament, is the government talking to the banks about this? And the answer was quite simple, no. So, you know, how does this play out? I imagine that you will have you would have banks taking large knocks. You know, if my house had been expropriated when I was only sort of halfway through the bond, I doubt very much that they'd be able to get, you know, enough for me in terms of secondhand TVs and you know, a car that doesn't run very well. So I just don't know, you know, where they would where they'd be able to take it from. I don't think the government is in the mood to stump up any significant amount of money. I think that as far as extending credit, they would be extremely, extremely conservative in future, and, you know, perhaps look at things look at projects that are less exposed to policy risk.
Hmm. But what about the legal challenges? Surely if somebody came along and wanted to expropriate my home, I would defend my rights at least on my own if I have to, but certainly right. Defend my rights through the legal process. Isn't that something that's going to happen?
Well, look, you know, as I say, there's big question marks exactly how does this play out? But you're quite correct. If somebody came to take my home, I'd do the same thing. I'm sure that if someone wanted to confiscate a large shopping mall, you'd see a very well-heeled challenge there. But you know, here's the thing, and this is why we have advised against complacency. The ANC has said over the last couple of weeks that they intend that the constitutional amendment should explicitly vest the compensation aspect in the hands of the executive. Now, a court has to enforce the law in front of it. Now, and while the constitutional amendment, is not the sum total of the process, what this the issue that this creates is that it rigs the rules of the game very much in favor of the state. If the courts are not able to sort of instruct an organ of state as to what would constitute a just and equitable price, but can maybe only sort of look at this and say, well, we disagree. You face the following situation: a property owner, particularly if it's you or me, you know, we can't stand up to the resources of the state indefinitely. And if the likely outcome is that well, you know, the courts might be able to say that this is not so cool, but all they can do is tell the relevant institution, just go back and try again, and they come back and say, well, we'll give you another 10,000. You know, I think you're in a position with it where there's very little that you can do. And this is why we say, you know, don't fall for the argument that somehow it's going to be sorted out down the line. You know, that, you know, the constitutional amendments, you know, not the main thing, it's the expropriation bill. All of these things are important. And to set up a situation where property rights have been shrunk and cauterized and placed in the hands of politicians, and removed from the jurisdiction of the courts, that is a situation that I do not think this country will want to find itself in.